last year at this time I was in California, actually. I was visiting the Israel Century City. So I'm going to tell you the drasha I said over there. I think I shared a lot of it, if not all of it, here at some point or another. But this is these were the thoughts. Avram Avinu is the Amud HaChesed, the forefather who relates Takarish Baruch with the name of Kel, Aleph Lamed. He represents Chesed, and you would therefore imagine that his primary achievements, his primary mitzvah, would be a mitzvah that's associated with Chesed. But when you associate a single mitzvah with Avram Avinu, what mitzvah do you associate? So there are a few, Hachnas Orchim, that fits Chesed very nicely. What else? Mila. So now, generally, Mila, act of Chesed, it's kind of the opposite. You know, like, we have to do it, but like, and Chazal acknowledges, Chazal said there's no Shasimcha b'monoyad and first Mila, because there is Sarali Yanuka. There's this pain for the child. So you know, for better or for worse, it's mitzvah Hashem, so it's for better, but, you know, it's kind of the opposite of Chesed. So it seems a little bit odd that would be that would be one of the defining mitzvahs of Avram Avinu. So I wanted to share with you a machshava that, you know, I once had a guest speaker in our shul where he introduced his Dvar Torah by saying that I could tell you a Dvar Torah on the Parsha, and if it's really super memorable and it's really great, you'll remember it once a year. Meaning, even best case scenario, you'll remember it when we get to that Parsha. Or he said, I could tell you a Dvar Torah on Tefillah, on Shmona Esrei, and if it's really super great and super memorable, you'll remember it 3 times each and every day. So I'm going to get more bang for my buck, and I'm going to tell you a Dvar Torah on Tefillah. So maybe we'll go with something that's on Tefillah, but also very much related to the Parsha. The Gra explains, when Hashem promises Avram Avinu, Anochi Magen Lach, Schercha Harbe Ma'od, I will be Magen Lach. So Magen of Avraham is something that certainly does appear in our Tefillah. In fact, we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Magen Avram. So what exactly does that mean, to be the Magen of Avram? What is a Magen? The shield, right? The Magen David is the shield of David, I guess. It looks like it's got a lot of holes in it. But, you know, what is a Magen? It's a shield. So in what way is HaKadosh Baruch Hu the shield of Avram? But it's more than that. You know, in the bracha itself, we talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Melch Ozer, Umoshia, Umagen. What's the difference between those three? Meaning Hashem, huge assist to God. Good, got it. But Ozer, Moshia, Magen, what's the difference between those three things? So the Gra has a remarkable insight, a beautiful insight. The Gra points out that we are expected to have bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But bitachon actually comes in 3 different levels. There's very low level bitachon, there's medium level bitachon, and then there's Avram Avinu bitachon. And you could define the levels as follows. Simplest level of bitachon. When I say low level, I don't mean it's something that like is beneath us. It's something we all have to have. But the simplest level of bitachon is that a person has to put in his shtadlus. We have to work really hard. And when we work really hard, we then have to have bitachon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will provide us with the success that we're hoping for. But it sort of fits, you know, when you work, you want to make a lot of money. So you work really, really hard in school. And when you work really, really hard in school, you get good grades. And when you get good grades, you get into a good graduate school. When you get the right degree from the right graduate school, you hope to get a great job that's going to give you a lot, that's going to make you a lot of money. So obviously, you know, it's all in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You could study all you want, but, you know, a teacher who has it in for you, or you know, you weren't feeling well the day you took the big exam, or things could happen and fall apart. You messed up an interview. Things could happen and they fall apart. So you know that it's in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it makes sense. It fits with what you're doing. You want to be you want to be in great shape, so you start exercising and running and lifting and whatever. You do all these different things. And you know, ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will determine whether you bust your knee and have to sit on the couch eating Doritos for 6 months. Not kosher, Israeli Doritos, right? So for that, right? You know, ultimately, it's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but what you're doing makes sense. You know, it fits. It fits the goal that you're trying to do. That is the lowest level of bitachon. That is the level of bitachon where we put in our shtadlus, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Ozer. What does it mean, Ozer? He's helping us in what we're doing. We're doing it and he's helping. He's making it happen. Then there's a higher level bitachon. And that's the bitachon that a person has to have when he knows that something is completely out of his hands. He doesn't have the ability to do anything. Nothing. For example, and he knows it. We all know it. What would be an example of that? Where you know that you have zero control over the situation. Person is not feeling well. They go to the doctor. The doctor says, it looks like it might be serious. I need to run some tests. So they take your blood or whatever. They do some sort of imaging. And you have to wait a day till the results come back. What can you do to make sure that the diagnosis is what there's nothing. Nothing you can do. And you know that there's nothing you can do. You know that the only one in control is Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the second level of bitachon. That is Moshia. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves us when we can't do anything. In general, tefillah only becomes a meaningful experience for people who've at least had to have that level of bitachon. You know, any educator will tell you that kids have such a hard time with tefillah nowadays, specifically because they lack for nothing. Because we have everything. We never had to want for food. We never had to, you know, worry about having a roof over our heads for the most part. You know, it's very hard to feel the sense of tefillah, of the highest levels of tefillah, of real sincere tefillah, when we don't feel a sense of lacking, when we don't feel that we're completely not in control, that it's all in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mendel Blachman used to advise, Rabbi Kamenetsky tells us that when he would ask how to inspire kids to tefillah, he said, take a field trip to Sloan Kettering. You know, just let them see that there are things that are not in our hands, and that we rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that not everybody has everything. Just this week, Paul Allen died. Right, who is Paul Allen? He was Bill Gates' college roommate. They dropped out together, and they started Microsoft together. And they were both, you know, many times over billionaires. So Paul Allen owned several professional teams. You know, he's a very, very rich fellow. I assume he was able to afford the best medical care that anyone could ever have. The very best. But, you know, ultimately, sometimes things aren't in our hands. And it doesn't matter what kind of doctors you have, and it doesn't matter what you do. Sometimes things are in our hands. And a person comes to that recognition, that's where a person can really reach HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Tefillah. And then there's a third level of bitachon, which is even beyond that. What could possibly be beyond that? Sometimes a person trusts Hashem so much that he's going to do HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, even when it seems that doing the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will achieve the opposite of what he's trying to achieve. A person wants to become wealthy. What's the natural assumption? You want to become wealthy, what should you do? Save all your money. Right? Don't give it away. If you give away your money, that's money you're not going to have. Right? I can give this money to charity and then it won't be mine. Or I can invest it in a smart investment and it will grow. So obviously, if you want to become rich, don't give any of your money away. Chazal say, Aser b'shvil shetes Hashem. Melech mamon, chaser. How do you preserve wealth? The melech, the salt, the preservative of wealth, chaser, is by giving up. How does that make any sense? It doesn't, but we have to have bitachon that it does. I was at a mini rabbi convention yesterday with Rav Asher Weiss, and one of the rabbis was telling me, he follows me on Twitter, so I was like, oh, thanks, okay. He was saying how Twitter is such a valuable tool to promote yourself. And like, I don't know if he, like he just struck a chord. That's like one of my pet peeves, that like, the whole self-promotion thing is, I'm very against it. You know, I said I have two rules on Twitter. You want to be a rabbi on Twitter, there are two rules that you have to have on Twitter. Don't engage in conversations, because people will say ridiculous things, then you're just going to engage them, you're going to get caught in the dirt, and you'll be in the mud all day. And the second rule is, don't promote yourself. You promote HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you promote His Torah, you promote inspiring stories. Don't promote yourself, ever. What do we ever have? You know, when Shlomo Zalman Auerbach died, hundreds of thousands of people came to his funeral. Rabbi Emanuel Feldman wrote a beautiful essay about the Leviathan of Shlomo Zalman. How did hundreds of thousands of people come to... You know, there were politicians that didn't even know who he was, and they just realized, ooh, this guy must have been really important, because hundreds of thousands of people came to his funeral, and they came to be Menachem Avin. Unbelievable. No, how did that happen? Like, his PR office must have been unbelievable. Right? The people that went out telling everyone how great he was, No, that's not the Darkei Shel Torah. That's not the way we do things. Counterintuitive, right? You would think in today's day and age, if you want your name to be known, you want to get Agadla Shemecha. So you can't be an Anochi Ofer Ve'efer Jew if you want Vagadla Shemecha. You can't be, oh, I'm nothing, I'm dirt. If you want to be Vagadla Shemecha, I'm going to make your name great, you're going to be famous. You have to promote yourself. And this rabbi was telling me, there's so much competition out there. There's a lot of competition. How are you going to get ahead? That's not what we do. We're not trying to get ahead. We're trying to get a Kodesh Baruch Hu ahead. He's the one that's supposed to be ahead. The greatest schar comes from this kind of bitachon. Magen lach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm the magen for you, because that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a magen. What does it mean, magen? You're doing something that you think is going to achieve the opposite of your goal, but don't worry, I'm going to protect you. It's not going to achieve the opposite of your goal. The negative is not going to come from doing the right thing. I've mentioned in the past, but it's one of my favorite stories, so I'm going to tell it to you again. A story about Rav Gusman Zichrono Livracha. Rav Gusman's yeshiva was located in Rechavia, and the building initially did not have a kitchen facility. They didn't have any kitchen in the building. So there was a nursing home next door to the yeshiva that had full food service in the nursing home, because obviously the old people have to eat. But the nursing home was under a hashkacha that would have been considered substandard for the community from which Rav Gusman's Talmidim came. Rav Gusman went to check out the facility, see how it operated, and see if it taka was kosher or not, was good enough or not, and he was gratified to discover that it was one run with actually very high standards of kosher, so it didn't have a big name, Ashkacha, but it was good, he was happy with what he saw. So he made arrangements for his Talmidim to eat meals at the nursing home. So Gusman's in the Beis Medrash one day, and a young rabbinic representative of a big name, Ashkacha, visits Rav Gusman, and he offers a warning. He says, Kvod HaRav, which is a term of honor, if you tell your students not to eat at that nursing home and you denounce the Hashkacha, then we'll put your name on our letterhead and we'll hail you as one of the Gedolei Yisrael. If, however, you continue to allow the boys to eat there, your name is going to appear on placards all over every street corner in Yerushalayim, and we're going to denounce you as someone who's causing young people to do averos. Rav Gusman didn't even look up from his Gemara, and he responded, Yingala, which, by the way, is not a term of kavod. When I was 21 years old, I was a dayan in Vilna. And once I walked into a meeting of the dayanim a few minutes late. When I walked into the room, Rav Chaim Eiser stood up for me. And as a result of that, the entire rabbinate of Vilna stood up for me at the age of 21. And just a few years later, the Nazis shot my only son to death and discarded his body on a heap of garbage. I was unsuccessful in trying to protect him or shield him. I climbed onto the heap of garbage, removed the shoes from his bloodied, lifeless body so I could sell the shoes of my dead son to buy food for my wife and daughter. If you think that any honor you give me is going to match the honor of the entire rabbinate of Vilna standing for me at the age of 21, or that any indignity, any bizyonos that you try to make me suffer will match the indignity of bartering my dead son's shoes for food, I'm sorry, you are sadly mistaken. Have a good day. That's some stolz, right? So it's a man who's only interested in what Hashem wants from him. No politics, no pressure. Easy path would be given to the demands. Oh, I'm a gadol now. And he was a gadol. Gonola. But it's, what does Hashem want me to do? What's the emes? And what emerges from the Gra is that for somebody to achieve greatness, it's critical that we not only have to do the things that we like to do, we even have to do things that are counterintuitive to our goal. Avraham Avinu, to become the Amun HaChesed, he had to be willing to go through with the Akedah. He had to be willing to slaughter his own son. That is the ultimate Magen Avraham. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you, you know, your mission in life. What's Avram's mission in life? He is going to spread monotheism. He's going to be the beginning of a great nation. Well, you know how you start a great nation? With a kid. And it took him a long time to get that kid. And now you're telling me that the way I'm going to be a great nation is by killing that child? That doesn't make any sense. Magen Avram. HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects Avram. And even in his first great act, getting thrown into the furnace at Or Kasdan, the one that's not reported in the Torah, it was a counterintuitive decision.
If Avraham wanted to preach monotheism and teach it to the ignorant masses who didn't know anything about monotheism, you know what's really helpful if you want to preach monotheism? Being alive. It's very helpful. If you're dead, it's very hard to preach. And yet, he's willing to walk into the... because that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to do. How's it going to happen? How's this going to achieve my goal? Magen Avraham. And it's therefore no surprise that Tmimus, for Bnei Avraham, people who are defined as Gomlei Chasadim, which is what Bnei Avraham are, how do we achieve Tmimus, the sense of completeness? It's achieved with our willingness to participate in the Briso Shel Avraham Avin, causing Tzara Liyanuka. Because our dedication to any given cause or any midah may be great, but our dedication to HaKadosh Baruch Hu always, always has to be greater. So to achieve the three levels of bitachon that we just spoke about, a person has to live with really a single guiding principle. And that is, what does Hashem want from me? Every single decision, that simple question in mind. It's not always easy to answer it correctly, but that always has to be the question. That's our mission in life. About a year ago, there was a student in YU who was a graduate, I think it was in Shalvim at the time, a graduate of Modern Orthodox High School, who wrote an essay that was sent around amongst all the mechanchim in the Modern Orthodox community. And he essentially called out the entire community for several failings, but a general lack of sincerity. So leaving out the specifics of the argument and, you know, the individual points, it's clear that in his experience, our community hasn't done enough of asking, what does Hashem want from you? What does Hashem want from me? But there's one thing that he was wrong about, and that is the idea that modern Orthodox kids are jumping ship and either becoming Haredi or irreligious. That's simply statistically not true. We have statistics of that. So, while, you know, it feels like it sometimes, because, like, you know that guy that's not religious anymore, and you know that other guy that's, you know, been learning in Brisk for 27 Shana Chavzayin or whatever, you know. So, like, but he was captain of the basketball team, or, you know. But that's not normally what happens. Normally what happens is kids are like their parents. And we have data to back this up. There's no doubt about it. But that's great news on a certain level. Because throughout the entire rest of Western civilization, religion is way on the way down. You know, kids are way less religious than their parents. The very fact that we're treading water is, in a certain way, it's pretty miraculous. But, one thing that we always have to keep in mind is that is not how we define success. Success is never defined as staying the same. That's not what success is. Rav Asher Weiss was giving us the mashal yesterday on, you know, you're climbing up a steep, steep hill. So how do you get up the steep hill? If you just stand still, you'll tip right over. One breeze comes, you'll fall right over. You have to get momentum. You got to run. And the second you stop doing that, you're gonna fall backwards. One of the great Jewish leaders in the meeting that we had in the OU a while ago, after they were discussing this, and they were saying, "Wow, unbelievable! We're managing to pass on our traditions to our children in exactly the way that we do them, and they're exactly the same level of religious observance as we are." So I remember one of the people in the room said, "He's a lawyer." He said, "That's success? That's not success." Success is growth. Success is when we become more. That's a very important thing. If we could tap into our Avraham Avinu, the man who discovered God at 40, whose first significant accomplishment in religion happened while he was in his 70s, who found the courage and energy to grow well into adulthood, that's success. And, you know, it's very hard. Like, how do I know that I'm going to pass on to my children everything that I am and that I value? It's very hard to know that all of that is going to get passed on. And even if it does, so at most, what? My kids are going to be me? There's one thing that you can pass on to your children that can allow them to exceed everything that you do. And that is the sense of wanting to grow. If the way kids remember their parents is, oh yeah, they were always growing. They always wanted to be more. In Kaylee Masmidim program this past summer, we had a Friday night post tish, I don't know what it was, but we were sitting around schmoozing, and I asked the guys, tell me who your greatest hero in life is and why. It's a very interesting one. Kid was the Lubavitcher Rebbe, another kid was whatever, you know, everyone came up with creative answers. You know, I think one kid was Kermit the Frog, I don't know, whatever, everyone came up with different answers. I don't even think he's my favorite Muppet, but okay. And one kid said, my parents. Okay, cute, nice, I mean, good, and sweet. He said, because my parents became Bali Tshuva in college. They don't know very much, but they're always learning. They're always growing. And I can tell you, my parents, who they are this year is not who they were last year, and that wasn't who they were the year before. And this kid is a Mitsuya, I mean, he's like beyond. The kid is like, you know, he's in Shalom now with my son, he's beyond. Is it a wonder? Right? If that's the message, then what we're passing down is actually to be greater, to be better. That's our golden life. Our golden life is to come closer and closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Someone just told me on the way into yeshiva that they overheard two guys talking, both accounting majors. Maybe one of you guys were in the conversation. Over two accounting majors talking, and one of them said to the other, you know, you spend more time in the Beis Medrash than I do, and I'm falling so far behind in my accounting work, I don't know how you do it. I'm like sinking in accounting, and you're here in the Beis Medrash more than I am. And the other one said, wow, I'm in the Beis Medrash more than you, and I'm falling so behind above Metziah, I'm sinking above Metziah. I don't know how in the world you keep up with above Metziah. A matter of perspective. We always have to be looking to grow. We always have to be looking to achieve more. Magen Avram, even if it's counterintuitive. What do you mean? If I keep all my siddharim, then I won't do well in my grades, and then I won't accomplish my goals. Magen Avram. Kodesh Baruch Hu protects. Obviously, we have to use our time efficiently and use our time wisely, but that doesn't mean that we just, okay, so morning seder is not going to be exactly taking attendance every single day. No. Magen Avraham, HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects us when we do the Ratzon HaShem.